Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We've got a tough Relationship Friday topic to tackle tonight. We're talking about the end of your relationship, specifically divorce. According to the CDC, marriage and divorce rates have actually declined significantly since 2000, from 4% per 1,000 people to 2.5% per 1,000 people in 2021. That's nearly half. But the reasons have remained pretty consistent. 74% of couples cite lack of commitment as the reason for divorce, and that's actually higher than infidelity at 60%, and domestic abuse at 24%. Well, tonight, if you are headed towards divorce, we're talking to the experts to help you get through the emotional and the legal rough spots. My guests are Dr. Roz Acker-Black, relationship expert and clinical psychologist, and divorce attorney Michelle C. Thomas. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question. If you need us to throw you a lifeline, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can text me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Roz, Michelle, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Sure thing. I want to first go to you, Michelle, because you've mentioned this on this program before about January and just being a really, do I say popular? I don't know. It's a big month for divorces. Is that still the case for you in your practice? And why do you think that is?
Yeah, Harold. So January is known as National Divorce Month. And that is because divorce lawyers across the country experience just skyrocketing volumes of calls in January. And that's for a number of reasons. Number one, it's part of people's New Year resolutions. A lot of people think to themselves, you know, what do I need to do to make sure that this next year is better than my last? And a lot of times that means getting rid of some dead weight. And that dead weight may be the form of a wife or a husband and their spouse. At other times, some families decide to wait until after the holidays before they tell the children that mom or dad are leaving. And so there's a boom there in January. But a lot of times it's about people wanting to live their best life, deciding what is acceptable and what's not for them, and wanting to make a change. And that change oftentimes starts at home, with changing their home life, their marriage, and their marital situation.
Golly, and I thought weight loss was a big New Year's resolution. Oh, my gracious. So, yeah, talk about dead weight. So, Dr. Roz, for people who are considering divorce outside of domestic abuse and domestic violence, a lot of people would say, yeah, that's definitely a no-brainer. But how do you know when you are ready to cut those ties and divorce? What are the signs?
That's a great question, Harold. And, you know, honestly, I have the opposite effect. In January, people are trying to work on their relationships. They don't necessarily want to leave their marriage, and it's for the same reasons. That they want to be in therapy because they're like, I can't take another year like last year or the 5 years prior.
So the 5 years? Like, oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, people, I mean, you know, you have the seven-year itch, which really starts in about year five, if we're going to be honest. And it's because you're still trying to adjust to being in a relationship. And so most people don't want to break up their families. They don't. But when they get to that point where it's so toxic that they're just unhappy, they don't know what else to do. And so it appears that I would rather be by myself than to feel this pain every single day. Mm-hmm. And so that's when divorce becomes an option for some people.
Yeah. When you talk to people who are considering it, what... I mean, obviously, we can talk about, well, It's the money, lack of commitment, infidelity. It, you know, I don't like his mama, whatever it happens to be. But from an emotional standpoint, what is it that, you know, the people that you are counseling, whether they be individually or as a couple, how do you know when they are at an impasse? What's their emotional posture?
That's a great question. And most people think that infidelity is the end all to be all, but it really isn't. It really is just a symptom of core problems that they haven't figured out yet. And so when people are in that space of when they're at an impasse, it's because someone feels so isolated, someone feels lonely in the marriage. They're not getting their needs met. They're not getting the attention that they desire. They don't feel desired. And then there's so much temptation out in the world that's showing them the attention that they're not getting at home. And so it just feels like, I need a break from this. I have to step away from this. This no longer serves me.
Mm-hmm. 202-319.
If I can.
Go right ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, if I can, that I agree with that. And also there's a lack of gratitude and appreciation for the partner. So I see that a lot of times people feel that they're just being taken for granted and that their spouse is not, you know, appreciating the things or showing that gratitude toward them. And then ultimately that begins to erode their relationship. One party or one spouse becomes resentful toward the other spouse, and it's just sort of a downhill spiral from there.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about divorce tonight. If you are finding yourself heading in that direction, if you are at the point of no return, how do you get through the legal and the emotional bumps of divorce? Lines are open at 202-319-7810. Okay, so Michelle, before someone comes to see you, what about getting a divorce, what is it that you believe they need to have already taken care of, addressed, you know, legally? I mean, because I would imagine you may get some phone calls and you pick up the phone and somebody is just angry. And yeah, there you go. I know that laugh. You know, they're just angry. When they call you or when they walk into your office, is that a good place to be when they sit down to talk to you about divorce?
It's not a good place to be, even though it's a common place for people to be. So you shouldn't beat yourself up over it. But if you can, try to sort of minimize the emotionalism and approach it from sort of a logical place and focusing on, you know, we have a problem here. And how are we going to solve this problem, which is this family that now needs to begin the process of separating? And when you meet with a lawyer, that's why I always say it's great to have, you know, the therapeutic support while you navigate the process. So that way you can focus on the emotional component with your therapist and your support group and circle. When you meet with your lawyer, you want to be, you know, clear-minded about your goals, what your desired outcomes are. You want to be as organized as possible, gathering financial data, gathering information so that you can maximize on your time with your attorney when you sit down for that consultation.
Explain gathering financial data.
So, you know, Harold, you would be surprised at the number of spouses who lack financial insight. They don't know, you know, what the mortgage is, whether the mortgage has been paid, whether the bills are current. They don't know whether they have or their spouse has retirement accounts or pensions. They don't know where the money is kept, or they don't know where the money went. So there are all these unanswered questions a lot of times. They don't know whether there's tax debt in a lot of instances. So there's all these unanswered questions. And if you can sort of do some due diligence on your end before you meet with your lawyer, try to find out. If you have a tax return, review it. Try to gain some financial intelligence about the state of affairs in your marriage before you meet with your lawyer, and that's going to help your lawyer help you. So it's a partnership, and you want to do your part as much as you can. And if you don't know what to do, of course, the lawyer should be able to provide guidance and steer you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. When people come to you, Dr. Raj, and they say they want a divorce, what is your end goal? Is your goal to help them stay together, or is your goal to help them get divorced?
Great question, Harold. My goal is to help them figure out what their core issues are, because the truth of the matter is, even if they leave that current marriage, if they don't figure out what it, because two people maintain the marriage, right? And so the issue is with both, because somebody is doing something in a relationship that's maintaining some the behavior that is inappropriate. And I'm not blaming people, don't mistake that. But if you let something slide one time, then the spouse gets the idea that, oh, it was okay for me to do that, and then they'll do it again. So by default, you don't even realize that you accepted the behavior and allowed them to and maintain the behavior. Mm. And so from that perspective, I try to help people to understand the core of how they are functioning in relationships and their relationship personality. Because if you don't master that, then you're just going to take it to the next relationship as well. So you have to figure out what the core issues are with you yourself and how it's affecting your relationship and your marriage.
What would you say are the most frequent core issues that you have encountered when people come to you and say that they want to be divorced?
Great question. Most people do not know how to verbalize what they need. And here's the thing. People, and most of the men, they don't know how to express or verbalize their feelings. Because as men, you guys have been told since the age of two, stop crying, be a man, you know, and get up and deal with your issues. But if you don't have the tools to deal with those things, you then become an adult who does not know how to manage or verbalize or express how you feel, express what you need. And so most men are in a relationship or in a marriage, and they're silently suffering because they are told that you have to be a man about this situation. You have to just take it. And, you know, I hate this happy life, happy wife. I hate that. Always say happy house, happy spouse, you know, because at the end of the day, the relationship is 100% and 100%. And so everybody has to meet each other's needs in the relationship. But what happens is that men become silent because they feel that if they say something, then they don't want to be characterized as being aggressive. They don't want to be characterized as being emotionally abusive. They don't want to be characterized as all of these negative things that they've heard about men being in relationships. And so because of that, they do not express what they need. And so with so many men who are in marriages and relationships that are silently suffering, and as Michelle mentioned earlier, they become resentful. They become resentful because it's like they feel like they don't have a voice. They feel like their wife has turned into their mother, or that life is just all about the kids, and that's it. And so they just, to be the provider and the protector, they just have to take it. And when you feel that way, it's very hard for you to function like you want to in your marriage. And so any and everything that your spouse does gets on your nerves. You begin to stonewall. You begin to treat your spouse as if you don't want to be in the presence. You don't come home at night. You work 12, 16 hours. And even if you're just hanging out at work and you're not really working, you're just not coming home because you don't want to be around it. And it may not necessarily be a whole bunch of arguing at home, but it may be because you don't feel like you can be an advocate for yourself. And it produces this helpless and hopeless feeling, if that makes sense.
We're going to take a break, but we are talking tonight about divorce, how to get through the legal and emotional rough spots. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking to the experts to help you get through the emotional and legal rough spots of divorce. My guests are Dr. Roz Aker-Black, relationship expert and clinical psychologist, and divorce attorney Michelle C. Thomas. Lines are open if you have a comment or question. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Okay, Michelle, how much does a divorce cost?
A lot.
Forgive both of us for laughing, but yeah, I get it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
please.
I mean, you know, I have to be honest about it, and you know, but it really depends. I always tell people that, you know, clients have control over costs in a lot of situations. And so the more amicable the divorce and separation can be, oftentimes the lower the cost. And so it really behooves the parties to try to work together, to put their pettiness aside, to put their resentment aside, to focus on resolving the legal and financial issues in the marriage. Save the emotional stuff for your resolution, you know, post-separation, post-divorce. But the more contentious it is, which obviously a lot of divorces are contentious, a lot of times that's what ratchets up the fees. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to resolve divorce, quite frankly, out of court and out of litigation if you have the mindset and the willingness to do so and work for it.
Petty? Did you say pettiness?
I did, Harold. I sure did. Well, a lot of times it's people's, you know, the bitterness, the hurt, the anger, the trauma, it blinds people's ability to focus on the legal issues and get matters resolved in a way that's fair, you know, and equitable for everybody involved. And so when that happens, when people are sort of led by that bitterness and anger because of what happened to them, and all those feelings may be very legitimate. So there's I'm not saying that it's not a legitimate feeling. What I'm suggesting is that if people can focus on the legal issues and then resolve some of the emotional trauma through therapy, through, you know, church and so forth, that's going to help reduce the cost overall in a lot of instances.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the emotional and legal rough spots of divorce, how to avoid them. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's go to Kim, calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Kim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I was calling because this is a great topic. I recently have been considering divorce, and especially over the summertime. And
why?
One thing that really stuck out, because, as she said, I felt like I did not matter, that I was being used. I felt like our baby was more important than me. And plus, there are some cultural differences. My husband is from West Africa, and I'm from America. And so there were a lot of cultural differences. And one thing that really stuck out to me that she said, and this is something that I have been dealing with within myself, is that I have to take responsibility in how I allowed him to treat me, because it's my first marriage, and I've always longed and wanted to be married. And I let a lot of things slide that I shouldn't. I just was quiet. I wanted to be a Proverbs 31 wife. I'm really big into church, that sort of thing. But as I'm maturing in my marriage, I'm learning that I have to be the best advocate for myself. And I can't automatically allow him to think that he can treat me any kind of way or even treat me any kind of way. And I have to stand up for myself when it comes down to those things.
Just for those who are not faith inclined, of course, Proverbs 31 suggests, it says, charm is deceptive, beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. So, among other things. And so, Dr. Roz, help Kim out here. Let's talk about the emotional thing, the emotional part of it. Because I think a couple of things she said, you've got cultural differences. There is a child involved where she believes that her husband... How old is your child, Kim?
Three.
That the child is more important than her or the marriage. What do you tell her, Dr. Roz?
Well, Kim, the insight that you have is amazing. I love the idea that you said you needed to be an advocate for yourself, because sometimes as women, we get into that idea of trying to be this Proverbs 31 wife, and we lose ourselves in the process.
Absolutely.
And because of that, we wake up one day like, what just happened? Who am I? And you're that trying to figure out life.
Yeah, a year and a half ago, I walked past the mirror in the bathroom, and I had to back up, and I looked at myself, and I said, I didn't even recognize myself because I was so busy trying to conform to what he wanted me to be instead of being my authentic self.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Dr. Roz.
Is that, Kim, the insight that you have is fantastic. You have a choice. You can be you. And he's either going to get on board or the relationship is going to make a decision for itself, if that makes sense. So I love the idea that you want to be an advocate for yourself. And I say keep advocating for yourself, because at the end of the day, you want to teach those skills to your child. You want your child to see you functioning in a healthy manner.
And so Kim, let me ask you, Kim, have you and your husband considered counseling?
When he knew that I was done with the marriage, then he was like, okay, we can go to counseling, because I had been saying this for 3 years. Let's go to counseling. And he was adamant about he doesn't need counseling. But when, you know, I began to change and do things different and he sees that I'm not playing anymore, then it's, okay, let's get counseling. And I've been trying to find a counselor for like 2 months now, and it's really hard to find a counselor.
Dr. Roz, are you open for business?
Well, I'm not in Virginia, but I can make a referral for you in Virginia.
Well, we'll make sure.
Get her info, yeah.
Well, Dr. Roz, as always, and for your own information as well, Kim, after tonight's program, I'll make sure that Dr. Roz's information is posted on our website on whur.com. When you go to the website tonight after 9 o'clock, you will just scroll down and you will see tonight's program, and there will be information for you to contact Dr. Roz.
Great.
Okay. Kim, hang in there. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Good luck to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, Michelle, you said something about kind of putting aside your differences and essentially having a do-it-yourself divorce. How is that done?
Yeah, well, no, I wasn't suggesting that people have a do-it-themselves divorce, but what I am
my words. Those were my words.
Sir. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important that people do seek out competent legal counsel as early as possible in the process, because you don't want any missteps or mishaps, and every step or action you take along the way can affect the outcome. But I do think that it's helpful if people can try to focus on the legal issues as they're navigating the process, which is very difficult. But I am a big proponent of my clients also having therapeutic or spiritual support as they navigate the process, because you do need people to talk to. You need the right people. You don't want everyone in your business and giving you their 2 cents, but you do need to have a support system in place as you navigate it. So that way when you're meeting with your lawyer and trying to figure out the strategy and way forward, you really can focus on you know, the rational, reasonable, you know, perspective and what makes sense for you and your family versus all the emotionalism. Because, you know, divorce is hard. I mean, there's no, I think we can all agree on that. It's draining financially. It's draining emotionally. The impact can certainly have long-lasting effects. So I'm not minimizing that at all, but it is important to try to, you know, gather your resources as as is necessary so you can focus on getting through the process as quickly and, you know, efficiently and fairly as possible, favorably as possible.
You said earlier when I asked how much does a divorce cost, you said a lot. The most expensive divorce in history, Bill and Melinda Gates, $76 billion with a B, dollars. And yeah, oof, clutch your pearls. But the, you know, when you are dealing with high dollar clients, those who are outside of just your run of the mill middle class people, do things get testier, more difficult when there is houses and lands, as they say?
Well, you know, Harold, I do handle a lot of, you know, high net worth divorce. And what I can tell you is a lot of times they are focused on wanting to get this resolved outside of court. So we're focusing on trying to reach a settlement. And it can take a long time and cost a lot of money because sometimes you may have to engage various experts, various financial experts, business experts, property, et cetera, in order to, you know, get to reach the end goal. But a lot of times there is a focus on keeping things getting things resolved as amicably and quietly as possible. But if someone is resentful, if someone is bitter, if there's been a major betrayal and one of the people are not acting, you know, as reasonably or rationally as possible, then it can become a knockdown, drag out war. But it's always the goal to try to avoid that as possible.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Alan calling from Chicago. Alan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Alan, can you hear me? Alan, call me back if you have a chance. Dr. Roz,
can you hear me?
Alan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Hey, my good dude, how you doing, brother?
I'm hanging in there.
All right. I'm not interested in divorce myself. I'm just curious if our panelists, hey, Dr. Roz, have any data on divorce rates post-pandemic. I know it's kind of early for that, but is there any kind of correlation between divorce rates and the pandemic?
Oh, that is a great question. What I can say is that more people were in therapy during the pandemic because they had to spend time together, and then they realized that they didn't like each other as much as they thought. And so I was able to help some couples, but then some couples did end up in divorce, unfortunately.
You know, and what about you, Michelle? Have you seen a rise in divorce work post-pandemic?
Yeah, so 2020, 2021 was insane. It was explosive in terms of phones just ringing off the hook. And it's for that exact reason. You know, we're going through our day-to-day lives. People are at work, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. They're commuting. They're going to the gym. Mm-hmm. You're only spending like 2 or 3 hours with your significant other, and then you're off again the next day. So when people were stuck and locked in a house together, you know, hour after hour, day after day, people were like, wait a minute, this is who I'm married to? Oh, no. Oh, I'm not doing this. And so, I mean, people were calling on the weekend, on Sunday, like, I need a consultation right now. And I'm like, but it's Sunday. It was really, really intense. And I've still seen the effects. I still get clients who call and say that things began to deteriorate during the pandemic when they were stuck together and they never really recovered from that. And it's because people just really didn't know, you know, who they were married to, or they lost sight of that. And when they realized it, and also our mortality, I think, became more prevalent during, you know, 2020, 2021. And people began to say, well, wait a minute, life is really short. Do I really want to spend it this way with this person? And so there was definitely a spike.
There you go, Alan. Thank you so much. I do want to drill down, Dr. Roz, a little bit on what Alan was, well, what Alan was asking, but also something that Michelle just said. And I think it's, that was a profound statement that Michelle just dropped on us, where you begin to spend more time with this person and you ask yourself, well, my goodness, is this who I'm married to? How does that happen if you married the person in the first place? So is that close proximity a contributing factor, or is it that when you are part of the hustle and bustle of life, which means that you really don't spend any time with that person, and so you only have a little bit of time to like them a lot, as opposed to a whole lot of time not to like them at all?
Very, very great question. And
thank you for the great question, Vin.
Michelle is absolutely right. The proximity of, I got to see you day in and day out. At least when I can go to my job, I don't have to hear your nagging. I don't have to see your face. I don't have to see you not picking up your clothes. Like the things that irritate me when we were just in the regular world pre-pandemic, like now I have to see that 24/7. And so people, the livable flaws that were cute in the beginning became nuisance in the pandemic. Because it's like, oh my God, do you chew so loud like that every single day? It was like the little things that people were complaining about. And so I think it was the proximity. And I think it was the idea, too, that we were all in a very anxious state because we didn't know what was going on. You know, and it was like, now, of course, I'm a grown up and I have to stay in this house and I don't know what to do. And now I got to figure out how to spend my time. And then it's like, if I go outside, I might die. If I go here, I might die. I can't even go to the bar to get away from you because it's closed. So all the things that were our outlets were taken away from us. Because I've been married 17 years, love my husband dearly, but I mean, some days we look at each other like we both crazy because, I mean, we come from two different walks of life, and so our experiences are very differently, and so our perceptions are going to be different. But the saving grace is that some people could find something to do in that time to occupy themselves, and so they would. Social media became a huge thing during the pandemic. You know, people got on TikTok and, you know, Instagram and Facebook and all that. And so they had things to occupy their time. But that also caused friction because now they're in a realm where people are seeing them for the first time. They're new. And so they're getting the attention that they may not be getting at home. And so now everything that's on social media looks like it's greener pastures. And I want more of that, and I don't want what's in my house because what's in my house is driving me crazy and insane.
Dr. Roz, I asked Michelle earlier, how much does divorce cost? From your perspective, what is the emotional cost of a divorce? What can it be?
It can be devastating. And here's why, because people come to relationships with different experiences. And so if you're an individual that has already had abandonment issues, say from your caretakers, from your parents. You already didn't feel wanted by them, by the people who are supposed to love you, right? Because your parents, out of anybody in this world, are supposed to love you, right? That just seems like that should be what the law is. But if that wasn't your experience, and now you've gotten into this relationship, and now it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that no one loves me, right? Because now my husband, who's supposed to love me, who legally said that he would be here for me, made vows or whatever, or my wife, they've given vows and said that they would be here forever to death do us part, and now they're leaving, it becomes this idea that everybody leaves me. And so if you don't have the proper tools to deal with that and to recognize what may have been the demise of that and knowing that it's not about you in that situation, especially when it comes to parents, right? Knowing that it's not about you, that it was about the parents, they didn't have the ability
to love you and manage you in the way that they probably should have, and probably because no one instilled it in them, you know, because we all just do what we know. We all do our default behavior. And so it becomes a huge, huge emotional cost for some people. They feel as if no one loves them. They become helpless. They become hopeless, sometimes suicidal, and sometimes they can't trust again. It's very hard for them to trust. But if we're going to take it a step further, if there's a family, and then the family is broken apart, and then the kids almost always think that the divorce is about them. And so the children think, if I could have just been good enough, my parents would have stayed together. Because typically what happens is when parents are beefing, right, when a couple is arguing, the kids think it's about them, because the parent would then become very frustrated and fuss at the kid. And so now the kid feels like they're the problem, when it's not really the kid that's the problem. It's the relationship. It's between the two parents. That's the issue. And so sometimes parents don't realize it, that they take out their frustrations on their kids. So in turn, those babies always think that if I had better grades, if I was a better student, if I was a better kid, my parents would stay together. And so the emotional cost of a divorce is sometimes extremely high, sometimes very extremely high.
Michelle, when people come to you and say they want to get married, but they want a prenup, is that something that you handle?
We do handle prenups. Not only do we handle prenups, we recommend them because it's a lot better to discuss how things could, you know, end up down the road when you still love each other and like each other. So it's a much, you know, more cordial, calm, and, you know, fair conversation on the front end to figure out what could possibly happen, or, you know, how you're going to handle your properties and assets while you're still in love. So yes, that's all we can do on with the show on that, Harold. But I absolutely recommend in many situations.
Do you get people who give pushback? Because, you know, I never had one, but so does a couple come to you together for a prenup, or do they get separate representation for a prenup? That, because the latter seems to be, just seems to be a formula for disaster, it seems to be.
Yeah, well, it's best if both, each party has their own separate attorney. So generally, one attorney is not going to represent both parties to a prenuptial agreement, because there could be a conflict of interest. Because, hello, I've also had clients come to me for a prenup and ended up calling the marriage off, because in the process of negotiating and discussing the prenup, you begin to ask questions that may have otherwise been ignored. And you begin to find out, you know, on an even deeper level, what your partner's, you know, feelings and values are about money, about housework, about, you know, how you make decisions, you know, about hierarchy within your household. So all those kinds of issues that maybe you weren't talking about because you were just busy having fun and planning a wedding come to the surface when you're having these detailed discussions about a prenuptial agreement. And I've had people call the wedding off to say, well, wait a minute, you know, we can't even agree on this. How in the world are we going to have a marriage that lasts under these circumstances?
And that may be a good thing. But I think that may be a good thing. But it also seems to be antithetical to marriage if you already, maybe I'm an incurable romantic. Maybe that's my problem. But but it seems like you go in what seems to be an adversarial posture. And
but it,
I know I'm an incurable romantic. Help a brother. Help me understand. Well,
it doesn't have to be adversarial, because remember, the two people still like each other. And just because you have lawyers involved doesn't make it automatically adversarial. We're helping to bring a family together in the most responsible way. And I hear this all the time, Harold, you know, a prenup is like planning for your divorce. Why would you want a prenup when, you know, you're supposed to be married forever? And, you know, that may be, it's not sexy to have a discussions about prenups. However, it is essentially insurance. I mean, we know the divorce rates are roughly 50% or higher. We know that the reality is that every marriage doesn't last. And if you can't buy a house without insurance or a car without insurance, why make the biggest decision of your life, which is who you are going to marry and spend it with, without that additional insurance? So it may not be sexy, but if you end up pulling out your prenup down the road 5, 10, 15 years from now, you'll be glad you had one.
Well, considering the car insurance metaphor, I guess if you have a prenup, then moving forward, you just got to drive carefully. Slow down. Drive the speed limit.
Yeah.
Don't get any tickets.
Yeah,
how about that? But you know, so, Dr. Roz, have you had couples who have gotten divorced and then decide to remarry?
Yes, I have.
So what do you tell them when they come to you 1 year, 2 years, 5 years down the road, and you may have spoken to them when they were ending it all, and then they've decided to come back? I mean, are you standing in the counseling room with your hands on your hips, shaking your head, or what?
Absolutely not. I'm in the room asking, what are we going to do different this time? Because at the end of the day, and my single girlfriends say this all the time, there's pee in the dating pool. And so people think that once they leave their marriage, that it's going to be free and they're going to just have a much better dating life. And then they realize at the end of the day what marriage really means, that you have someone that has your back at the end of the day, someone who loves you, someone who cares about you, who's going to be there for you through thick and thin. So we work through those things, that what went wrong in the first marriage and how can we make sure that it doesn't take place in the second marriage. And I think by the time you get married the second time, you're just at a space where the little things don't bother you as much. at least that's what I've heard. So I don't know that from experience. So
yeah, how about that? Let us hope that is not your testimony.
Indeed.
I'm out of time here, but Michelle, from your perspective, I'll let you have a final word here about just making sure that things go as smoothly as possible for those who end up on the divorce side of things legally.
Sure. Be proactive about protecting your future. Be proactive, meaning seek competent legal counsel as early as possible in the process. Gather financial data, get your ducks in a row, be organized, and try to focus on the issues and address the emotional with people like Dr. Roz in therapy.
Yeah, although, as you mentioned before, Michelle, a lot of times you found yourself on the therapy end of things, even though that is not your wheelhouse.
Yes, it gives me meaning to the term attorney and counselor at law, because I feel like I do a whole lot of counseling as well, but certainly not licensed to do so. But it takes an emotional toll, divorce does. There's no way around that. But you want a good team around you, a good support system, and a good legal team as early as possible in the process. So be proactive about protecting your future.
Well, there you go. I think that'll be the last word. Dr. Roz, Michelle Thomas, thank you both for talking to us. And for those of you who are listening, if you're going to be in the dating pool, just don't drink the pool water. That is the Daily Drama for this Friday, January 19th, 2024. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Atkins-Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night, and have a good weekend.